basically the plan was to kind of like construct an array on the ground where the aircraft would be affixed to it and then the balloons above it, then slowly move the ground-based array out of the way and then the thing would slowly lift in the air. And the plan was quite literally to have this futuristic looking aircraft with a crew of Japanese personnel actually flying it, just get them back on the ground, because they'd basically been, you know, offered, well, you either work for us or you'll be prosecuted for war crimes.
Now, these were they all deformed, diseased, disfigured people? No.
No, none of these were deformed at all. These were like the guys trained to fly the gondolas. These were pilots, trained pilots,
okay,
but of literally about 5 feet tall, quite literally little men, because, again, space and weight were a premium. And so this is the key event that seems to have led to Roswell. And what happened was that the plan was literally to get this thing in the air and then just have the aircraft detach and land smoothly at White Sands. And then the balloon array could be recovered at a later date if that just happened to, you know, get carried away as it would.
So when we see reports, and I think we looked at maybe it was Jesse Marcel stooped over a picture of remnants of a balloon, that might have been real, you're saying?
Well, you know, I'll come to that, but there's a possibility of some of that being real. But basically what happened was that the plan was, this was a late afternoon flight, and the plan was to just get the whole system in the air, have the aircraft detach and land, and just see if it was a viable project. And everybody said it was that sort of weird and unwieldy that it was actually cancelled because it just wasn't seen as that viable. And the main reason why America wanted to do this, I was told, was because, obviously, you know, the atomic bomb and atomic power was coming to the fore. And the fear was that if, you know, there was a strike on a prominent U.S. airfield and the runways were destroyed, there was no vertical takeoff aircraft in use then, and helicopters were even at an early stage. And so they were looking at ways of trying to get aircraft in the air where there was no runway. And this was potentially seen as one way of doing it, having an aircraft lifted vertically by a balloon to a high level.
And again, we're talking about 1940-ish technology, so
yeah,
they have that kind of mentality then.
Yeah, and they were just trying to look at new and novel ways, and some of these things worked and some didn't, as this one didn't. But what happened was that, actually this is something that some of the UFO proponents about Roswell accept as well, that the whole device got struck by lightning. Now, the balloons, I was told, were polyethylene coated with aluminum, and then the device itself was basically metallic. So it was.
And what was the gas? Was it heated air, hydrogen, helium? What got it up there?
Well, it was just basically, you know, just like a lighter than air balloon system to get it into the air. Now, there was no explosion as such. I want to stress that. What happened was that it appears to have been the aircraft itself that was struck by lightning, where it was actually affixed to this huge balloon array. And what happened was, what actually happens a lot in New Mexico, even to this day, is that you don't even need bad weather to actually have thunderstorms and lightning in this part of New Mexico quite literally come out of the blue. Even without rain, it's kind of one of the unique weather
aspects of
that particular area.
Out there.
And the story I got was that when the array was struck by lightning, what happened was that this Horton-inspired device below the balloon system became partly detached with its nose pointing towards the ground and began just wildly spinning out of control. Now, obviously the plan was to have this thing land at White Sands, and the emergency crews on standby were on the ground there from an organization called the Armed Forces Special Weapons
Project. And again, were there people in the gondola and the plane?
No, there was no gondola with this. This was
just the plane, pulling up the plane. Okay.
Yeah, and these were four trained crew members and a pilot, so five altogether.
And they're in the plane?
They're in the plane.
All right.
And what happened was that it became partly detached with its nose spinning to the ground, and obviously the rescue and emergency people were on the ground, not trained to deal with the fact that this was now actually, you know, literally heading quite across New Mexico. And what happened was that at some point the aircraft and at least part of the balloon array became detached from the rest of the balloon array, and the weight of the aircraft brought the part of the system down at one location, and the military got out there that night by the time they secured the area, and literally just secured the area that night with a view to cleaning the entire site up the following morning when the sun rose. And when they actually did that, they found to their dismay that what had happened was when the system had come apart, it had ripped part of the outer coating off the aircraft, and one of the crew members had got sucked out. So you had, at the one location that the military had secured, you had the aircraft, a large amount of balloon debris, and four of the crew. Missing was a substantial amount of balloon debris, part of the outer coating of the aircraft, and one body, which apparently was found by Matt Brazel on the Foster Ranch some miles away. And what happened was that when the initial recovery was made, they sent aircraft up, spotter planes, trying to find this remaining material, and quite literally just missed it. And, you know, unfortunately, this was only like 24 hours, 48 hours after, and Brazel found it before they did. And as several of the sources said, if the military had got there first, then, you know, before Brazel did, then the story would never have leaked out. But the fact that he went to the sheriff's office, and in turn the sheriff went to the Roswell base, who in turn, you know, then issued this release, that kind of blew it all wide open. But there actually is interesting testimony suggesting that Brazel didn't just recover this huge field of debris, but actually found decomposing body parts as well.
Yes.
And that was supported by what several of the people told me, that he actually found at some, I think 2 miles from the location where they found the debris, he found this body that had been obviously pulverized because it had just fallen from a great height.
And it was small.
But it was like 5 feet in a flight suit. It had been out there a while and was decomposing. This was the summer heat.
It would have had the almond-shaped eyes, right?
Yeah.
If oriental.
Yes,
it would have that look.
Yes, and it obviously wasn't, you know, a U.S. Air Force pilot, like a Top Gun type guy or anything like that.
And maybe they had their head shaved.
Yeah, that's actually been put forward, that was a possibility. And the idea was that, you know, he went to the sheriff's office and reported finding this debris. And the story I got as to why Roswell put out this flying disc story and drew attention to it was they actually made inquiries immediately in the vicinity with White Sands and elsewhere and said, look, has anybody lost a huge balloon system, because we found what looks like balloon debris, but on a massive scale.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously not a weather balloon. Everybody said, no, we haven't lost anything. And the story I got was that the reason why White Sands said we haven't lost anything was because they were confident at this point that they'd recovered all the materials. And it was only when they actually, the following morning, when they began recovering and piecing everything together at this main crash site, that they realized that there were some components and one body missing.